Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. We are Three Women, Three Ways. We're happy to be here this Saturday morning. It's a little gloomy where we are, but we hope that we're not going to be gloomy on this show. We do have an interesting topic. But first, Connie Sue, could you introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Good morning, Heather. Good morning, listeners. Good morning, Deborah. This
morning.
Is Connie Sue, or also known as the Pink Lady or Pinkly. And I've been working in the anti-violence movement for the last 15 years or so. I'm a survivor of domestic violence and just absolutely love our show. We all have very different perspectives and views, but a commonality has brought us together. And so I'm just really excited to be here this morning and our topic this morning. I can't wait to delve into it. How about you, Deb?
Hey, good morning. I am excited to be here as well. I absolutely love our topic for today. I think it's appropriate with this being the, you know, January, the first month of the new year. And a little history about me is my tagline is, I lived it, I studied it, and I worked it. And by it, I mean domestic violence. So I have a pretty interdisciplinary understanding of the phenomenon that calls itself domestic violence and also violence against women and all forms of violence. So now that I've told you that, you're probably thinking how negative and how dark. But I actually find this work very rewarding and life-affirming. There are good things about understanding dynamics such as abusive relationships. So I am ready to get rolling, Heather.
Okay. Well, and one of those things that you find rewarding, I think, is the same thing I find rewarding, and that is sharing information with other people that helps make their lives better. And
yes.
That topic kind of fits in with what we're talking about today, which is that inner voice, that critical inner voice. And we've all heard it. We've all heard people saying, somebody asked you to train for a marathon and your inner voice says, oh, no, you can't do that. You're too old. Or somebody asked you to go back to school and you go, no, that's not going to work for me. I don't have the money. I don't have this. I don't have that. So we all listen to that critical voice. And before we went on the air, Deborah, you were saying, how many times a day do we talk to each other? Do we hear our inner voices?
Right. And before we do a show, all three of us do our research, and I just mostly turn to my own bookshelf. And one of the books that I refer to is by Jack Canfield. It's called The Success Principles, How to Get from Where You Are to Where You Want to Be. Now, Jack Canfield is an author, editor of the Chicken Soup for the Soul book series.
Uh-huh.
He's also a proponent for the principles of The Secret. But his 32nd principle is transform your inner critic into an inner coach. And he starts off, the very first paragraph says, research indicates the average person talks to himself or herself about 50,000 times a day.
Wow.
And, wow, huh?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And most 50,000. Of that self-talk is about yourself, and according to the researchers, it is 80% negative.
Mm. How come? Why do we? I mean, we've all experienced that. I experienced that almost, you know, on an hourly basis. You know, when things hit you, and or problems come up, or even when you're just trying to plan for your future, you keep hearing yourself saying, "No, I can't," or "No, you're not good enough for that," or "No, you don't have the skills for that." And why? Why do we do that to ourselves, Pinkley?
Well, you got that, Connie Sue?
Do I have what? Sorry, I'm on my cell phone this today. It's kind of hard to hear you guys, so I'm sorry. Are you asking about what is the critical inner voice, or
no,
why
I'm
do we do
that? Why we have it? Why do we have that critical? Why are we so critical of ourselves?
Well, I think that part of what I thought about is why do we do that, but how can we make a difference? I think that the inner voice can be our best friend. And that's what I wanted to tap into. there's an article here that I was reading that reflects the critical inner voice can be thought of as the language of the defensive process, which has been defined as an integrated system of thoughts and attitudes.
Okay, so in English, what does that mean?
It's how we internalize our thoughts. It's how we talk to ourselves. And it's not like the thoughts that you have inside of your head or your intuition or your critical voice are probably not the same things that you would say to someone sitting across from you while you're having coffee.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way of uniquely breaking down our thoughts. But this article talks about how to conquer that critical inner voice. And I think what really got me interested in this topic this morning for our listeners is often when I'm advocating for a survivor of domestic violence or sexual assault, is that I ask that person to really tap into their intuition, because I think our intuition is our guiding voice, but that is often discounted and we minimize what that really is telling us. And in fact, what it is telling you is it's bringing in all the senses that you have from life experiences, what your body is telling you, how you are emotionally, how you are physically. It's a compilation of what you are experiencing that no one else could see or feel or think, only you.
Well, again, I'm coming back to, so why are we so critical of ourselves? Do we even know?
Well, here's one thought on that, is why do we have a critical inner voice? Is often our critical inner voice can be thought of as a defensive process or a defensive monitor, if you will. And the way I look at it is I remember developing a critical inner voice, but not until I was an adult and involved in an abusive marriage. And so I think I developed my critical inner voice as a means to protect myself or to prevent myself from walking straight into an abusive onslaught of some kind. And
so it was kind of
like
self-censorship?
Yeah. My critical inner voice is saying, if you say that, this will happen.
Mm-hmm.
If you do that, this will happen. And so you use it kind of as a defense mechanism. And I think often comedians do it too when they're negative self-talk about themselves in the form of comedy. I just watched a movie with three of my granddaughters. It's called Pitch Perfect, and it's about a group of girls in an a cappella song group. And they were recruiting new members, and that one of the new members came up and said, "Hey, I'm Fat Amy." And they looked at her and said, "You call yourself Fat Amy?" And she said, "I say it so that I don't have to worry about you saying it behind my back."
Oh.
So I think that's like an illustration of what I'm talking about.
So you think it's a defensive mechanism. Makes us feel, even if we're not particularly experiencing violence, it makes us, if we don't try it, if we don't do it, then we protect ourselves against failure or bad things happening.
Yeah.
Okay, makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. So I've met people, though, who don't have that same critical voice. I've met people who have tremendous self-confidence, and they just don't have that critical inner voice. They're more of a cheerleader for themselves. So how come some of us have it and some of us don't?
I think that's what Connie Sue is saying, is that there are ways to conquer the inner critic and to revert back to the form of intuition where it is your inner critic is not a moral guide. It's just a voice that tends to think negatively, and I think, in my case, I think it's a defensive negativity. But okay. I think there's ways to overcome it, but you have to really want to, right?
Yeah. But why wouldn't you really want to? I mean, we were talking, about the fact that, you know, I, among other people, am probably going to be jobless by the end of the month. So I'm looking around at all sorts of jobs, and I'm seeing all sorts of wonderful positions, and part of me is going, no, I can't apply for that. They won't want me. No, they won't want me. And so I'm having to fight constantly against that inner voice because my mind says, well, why shouldn't you apply? Okay, they might not want you, but what's the harm in applying? They just might. But that's not what my inner voice is saying. That's what my outer voice is saying.
But I think you're hearing it from your inner voice first.
Yeah. So.
And then you're articulating that into words.
Yeah.
And it's
so,
almost
Connie
Sue, the critical inner voice, Heather, and for our listeners, it's almost like an internal enemy that it can affect every aspect of our lives. Including your self-esteem and confidence, personal intimate relationships. But I think the first thing that we have to do is be aware of what these thoughts are. And I think in a lot of therapy and counseling, they talk about changing your thoughts and turning those into positive thoughts or positive feelings instead of self-destructive or you're not good enough, and all those thought patterns that we go through when we're trying to, like, accomplish something. So I think it's a really complicated task or issue, but I think the first thing you need to do is to be aware of it. And your intuition is your guiding light.
This would be a good place to invite our listeners to give us a call, 646-378-0430, or you can join us in the chat room. We'd love to hear about your experiences with this inner voice or maybe even overcoming this inner voice. So, again, it is 646-378-0430. Please call us. Share in the discussion. Go ahead, Pinkley. I think I interrupted you, didn't I?
That's quite all right. What I'd like to jump off to is this is a resource I found about. These are five pathways to listening to your inner voice. So number one is check in with your heart. And what does that mean? What does that mean to you, Heather, when I say that?
Well, wow, that's a good thing. I guess check in with your heart would mean more about what do you really, really deep down think about it rather than what you think you should think or what might be comfortable to think. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And this information comes from a Claudette Rowley, who's got a master's in social work and counseling. It says, social conditioning teaches us to be logical and to use our heads. But when you're only using your head, you experience yourself and the world is limited because you're only experiencing it through your own lens internally. That's your critic. So when you take the time and the ability to listen to your heart, that is the non-logical, but yet very important part of listening to your inner voice.
Uh-oh, I think you're being challenged, aren't you, Heather?
Yeah. Wait a minute. This isn't feeling so comfortable.
and it also says scientifically.
Might be a little woo-woo for you, Heather. What do you think?
Yes, Heather, it also says scientifically that the benefit of this is that the same neurological tissue found in the brain is also found in the heart.
Oh, really?
And the heart is referenced to as the second brain and our emotional center. So it's crucial to good decision-making about your life to listen and check in with your heart, our second brain.
Oh, I like that.
I like that, too.
Yeah.
The second thing it says And these are five. So I like that it's broken down in a pretty simplistic way. It says, take the time to connect with your body. It's use your body as your compass, because your body has experienced these things in your life, and it will give you back information that you need to make soundful decisions. And it says, for example, as an example, I think that we can relate to this, if something comes up and you have that knot feeling in your stomach,
yeah,
like, for example, maybe a mother-in-law, or you have a neighbor that's coming over to visit all the time, or just something that you're just like, oh, man, not again, or it's that knot that stirs up in your stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really physically a knot, but it's a reaction that you're having. Like, you're not, your stomach just didn't turn into a knot, but that's what it feels like, right?
Yeah.
Well, and I was listening to an artist who did the spoken word, right? She does spoken word, which is kind of like a rap, but there's no music to it.
Uh-huh.
And she's talking about her experience and how she developed her art of the spoken word. Excuse me. And she said she learned a long time ago from her mother that your issues live in your tissues.
Go.
And I thought that was pretty powerful words, because that's why it keeps coming up for us, right? It's because somewhere it does reside in our physiological makeup, these experiences that we have. And unless we, kind of do some inner work and in managing that, then it's always going to pop up. And, you know, my experience is most often at the most inopportune moment. I'll be reminded of something that happened in my past, and it's impacting my decision-making right now. So I just thought that was a good illustration of that too, Connie, Sue, and Heather.
Yeah, that is. But it's still, you know, I mean, all of this talk about, well, your body, it shows up in your body, pay attention to your body. My body says get chocolate. That's all my body says. So, you know, I mean, I don't know, it sounds a little esoteric to me. It sounds a little, as you said, Deborah, a little woo-woo for me. What can I do when I get that critical voice? What's the practical thing that I can do? I mean, right now,
Heather, I'm trying to break it down for you in five ways.
Okay.
Five ways. We're on number two.
Okay, I'm a slow learner. Remember that.
That's okay. But we're only on number two, and it, you know what? It is woo-woo, but it's woo-woo scientifically
proven.
In fact, proven. But here's the deal. You got to want it.
Uh-huh.
And here's the other thing, is you have to take the time for it. And if I think to myself, how many times do I speak to myself every day? 50?
50,000.
It's like, wow, no wonder I'm tired. That's a lot of self-talk.
Yeah.
And if I could take a quarter of that and turn it around and have it be positive messages to myself rather than, oh, you're not good enough, you know, all the negative messages that we say to ourselves. If I could just take one message that I might tell myself and try to turn that into a positive sentence, let's just start with a word, you know, body image. Well, that's two words. So I may not have the perfect body image or body type, but it's good enough, you know, it's good enough. And it's mine, and it's giving me life.
Mm-hmm.
My body is giving me life, so I would like to accept it the way it is.
So are we on number three yet, Connie Sue?
Let's go to number three.
Okay.
Listen to your intuition.
Yeah.
It's simply,
well, isn't
knowing
intuition the same as that inner voice? How are they different?
Well,
intuition is simply something that you know exactly how you feel. You know, it's a gut feeling. It's a feeling It's your intuition. When you, it's a feeling. It's an intuition. It's your internal compass that is speaking to you from a deeper level than your heart and your head. I think it's a combination of both. That's just my thought on it.
I think the inner critic is the shadow side of intuition. So I think they're part of the same experience. Now, our intuition, I think, comes to us as a matter of DNA, you know, who comes from our ancestors. But it also is impacted by our environment because what happens is your intuition is that little emotional side of the brain. Like Connie Sue said, it's the emotional side of the brain, so it's an important center. But Western civilization tends to demean that right away. You know, we can't have heart in business. There's no crying in baseball. Those kinds of things. They're two completely separate realms. But what we're talking about now is how those come together.
Right.
And I don't think I developed a negative inner critic until I was involved in an abusive relationship. It says the voice in your head develops as you grow, as you develop as a human being, and it's most impacted by your nurturers, your mentors, the people in your life that are there to care for you. So if those people are on a positive side, you may not develop a negative inner critic. And that was my experience. I didn't have a negative inner critic until I was an adult and in an abusive relationship. At that point, I started developing the critical inner voice as it's in conflict with my intuition, I guess is what I'm saying. It's the negative thoughts and beliefs that are being, my abuser was trying to pass on to me. You know, like you're not good enough, you're fat, you're stupid, you're not a good mother, you're ugly, nobody wants you but me. You're terrible at this, you're terrible at that. And so my critical voice didn't develop until later, and I can actually, I do have that memory of when I didn't have it. So it's easier for me then to look at the inner critic as, I also want you to know that there are some people that don't think the inner critic is bad. And Heather, you mentioned that earlier. Before the show started, I think, that it isn't always bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've heard of Marcia Weider. She's a proponent of the secret philosophies, and she's got a business called the Dream University. But she says that your inner critic is good because it's trying to protect you. And so you need to listen to it, but then figure out what is true for you and what is not true for you. So
it's like kind of like a warning.
Yeah, it's like a warning. Listen to it, acknowledge it, and consider it, but still you go back to what you know is right for you. Does that make sense, Heather?
Yeah, what you're saying is kind of the inner critic can be kind of an early warning system.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a heads up. You know, you apply for this job, you know you don't have the right degree. But then your head can say, but you know what, I have a very similar degree, and if I can get past that, I know I can do this job.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So basically what you're saying is go from your stomach, your intuition, to your heart, your feelings, to your brain, your sense that you make of it, and then to the external world?
Yes.
Yeah. That's a great summary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that. Because
I usually go just the opposite. The external world to my brain, to my heart, to my stomach. And it does involve chocolate. Okay.
It is a good thing. When I worked at the anti-violence specifically in the shelter, that was our fifth food group.
Yes. Well, if you care to talk about chocolate or your inner voice, give us a call, 646-378-0430. We have a chat room you can join us on. We'd love to hear your thoughts about your inner voice and whether there really is such a thing or whether it's good or bad or how you deal with yours. Again, it's 646-378-0430. We'd love to hear from you. Now, one of the things you were saying, Deborah, about the way we develop our inner voice, you were saying that if you were getting support and everything that you need early on, you don't really develop such a critical inner voice. So for those of us who grew up in households where there was major dysfunction, maybe the family felt that it wasn't good to give positive reinforcement. It would just make the kid's head swell or something. So are you saying that those of us who have that experience are more likely to have that critical voice?
I guess I don't know that for sure, but I would. My logic is telling me yes, but Pinkley quizzed me before the show, too. She said, well, you never had a negative experience. And I said, no, I did have some negative voices, but they were mostly, I think, influences from what I call pop culture, such as TV, magazines, movies. And, of course, certainly peer pressure. When you're developing, there are a million ways we get input into our lives. But my rock and my foundation was having this strong, nurturing, loving core family that enabled me to defend myself against those enough, that I haven't been severely or majorly impacted by body images. That didn't really happen until I met the abuser. So I can clearly see in my life that having a negative, and this is very anecdotal, that once you have a really negative influence in your life, that you tend to develop an inner critic pretty easily.
Yeah. Well, and it seems natural almost.
Yes.
If everybody else is criticizing you, you may as well criticize you. I mean, that's what you know.
Right, and use it in a kind of defensive way to measure, if I do this, will this happen? Will the result be what I want, or will I end up being physically assaulted or verbally assaulted or in some way? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So in that respect, it's kind of, as you were saying, kind of good to have that inner voice.
Yeah.
Because it can protect you.
It can.
So
yeah.
How do you draw the line between when it's protecting you and when it's harming you? And does that bring us back to your list of five, Pinkley?
Well, we can certainly go on to number four. It talks about sabotage, self-saboteur.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, explain what that is.
Well, that's the part of you, your little inner voice that's telling you you're not good enough. Mm. Who do you think you are? These are just examples. Oh, here's a good one. If you take this new job, everyone will find out what a fraud you are.
Woo, that's a good one.
Yeah.
The saboteur's job is to protect you from taking risks and making changes. Wow, that's good.
Yeah, resistance to change. Yeah.
Resistance to change.
Well, it's the change it means the unknown, and unknown can always be threatening.
Yeah.
What if it's worse than what we have now,
Right. Yeah, I like that. The self-saboteur is, I can totally agree with that. I mean, if you say to yourself, and if I say to myself enough times, you'll never get that job, well, I'm not going to apply for it.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's
an
opportunity for me because I was listening to the negative voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rather than thinking, okay, I may not be perfectly suited, skill-wise for this job, but
mm-hmm.
I have five, like you said earlier, Heather, I have four, and that maybe I can talk my way around that.
Yeah. Okay, Pinkley, so how do you avoid that inner saboteur along with your inner voice?
Practice. You have to
take
the time. You have to take the time to go to your heart and then to practice that.
Well, you know, I learned a long time ago that how they say the shortest distance between two points is a straight line? The longest distance between two points is the distance between your head and your heart.
Oh, wow, that's good, Heather.
You can quote me.
So I'm wondering, you know, the critic in your process, just as an example that you've given us about looking for a job, that's really scary. I would say practice saying to myself, you know what, this is really scary, and acknowledge it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, part of it is like if we say it's scary, that means I'm a failure. But I would say, wow, this is going to be really hard. And I'm angry for being here, or I'm upset, or I'm disappointed, or whatever your thoughts or feelings are around that. But now to take a time, even, you know, I would say I'm going to practice this for myself. Even like I use the example of body image. Just the thought of me in my head saying body image, but rather than thinking to myself in one of those 50,000 conversations I have with myself a day, say it's what I have and it's keeping me alive, my body. So is it really about image? And like Deb was saying earlier, you know, the media, there's so much external forces that come at us every single day that tells us that we're not good enough, we're not pretty enough, we're not skinny enough, we're not rich enough, we don't have a big enough house. I mean, ads and you know, just all of the inundation that we are constantly faced with every single day. So turn your self-saboteur around and say, you know, and maybe the next job I have will be another stepping stone. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what's out there.
Yeah. Well, one of the battles that I have with myself, of course, is, you know, body image. I'm getting older. I'm, you know, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, when you have so many of those things that you're thinking of, it makes it tougher. I mean, if you just have one thing that you're thinking of, but when you have all of those things combined, and then you go, okay, and now I have to go out in the job market and compete with people half my age who are much more technically savvy than I am. And, you know, it is hard, you know, for that inner dialogue to just override that.
You can say instead of I'm competing with people that are more technologically savvy than I am, you can say they don't have the wisdom and experience I do. Anybody can learn computers. You know, I can learn that. You have that within you. But I wanted to read a little, just another source that was talking to me about inner critic, and she calls it the inner judge. It's the Woman's Book of Soul, and she writes little short essays, and it's Sue Patton Thole, Thoele. And just the end of it says, having the courage to disrobe our inner judge and lay aside the handcuffs of guilt allows us to be more tolerant and loving towards others, also draws more love to us. And she's a believer in affirmations. Do you, either of you, believe in affirmations?
I do.
I kind of do, but I don't practice them.
Okay, well, here's a couple that are simple. I love and appreciate myself. That's a solid affirmation. And the second one is, I am a worthwhile and capable woman, even though I make mistakes.
And by golly, people like me.
That's right. And love and appreciate myself. I think we have to get to that point where we can say that about ourselves first before we can get other people to say that.
Oh, that is so tough, though.
It is.
I mean, I think that's tougher than just about anything, is to just to mean it. I mean, you can say it, but to actually mean it is two different things, you know.
I agree, but I think that the practice, if you just say it, look yourself in the mirror in the morning and say it. Every day, if you did that every day, eventually you're going to start believing it, Heather.
You really believe that?
I do.
Okay. Because I'd like to believe that I'm a rich woman.
Say that too.
But I don't think saying it every day is going to have much of an impact on making it happen.
But Heather, I would challenge you in the question, because there's that question, I'm not good enough, I'm not rich enough, I'm not pretty enough, I'm not skinny enough. I would, in that word rich, I would say to myself, how do I find rich? How do I find that? Is that only in a materialistic way, or is that in a spiritual way? Or is that I'm enriched in friends, I'm rich in knowledge, I'm rich in education? So if you take just a word or a thought and stop yourself and go, well, what does that really mean to me? What does my intuition tell me? When I think of rich enough, I think of, well, those are other people's expectations of me, or what our society thinks that we should have. You know, we should all be driving around in our little dream cars and have a big fancy house and two kids and a dog. And they consider themselves rich, but are they really?
Yeah. No.
You know, and the wealth of maturity, when I forget things these days, I always say it's because my head is so full of wisdom.
Yeah.
And it's not because I'm forgetful. It's because it has to filter through all of this amazing wisdom that I have acquired. So it might take me a minute to respond to you.
I love that.
I was told my kids,
I always told my kids my head got full. So, you know, I now, you know, the new stuff starts to spill out because it's already full to capacity.
Or you could filter the stuff that's already there. You could do some spring cleaning and get rid of the,
that's a good idea.
Not helpful things that are already there, so there's room for new ideas and information.
Yeah. It is tough, though. I mean, we're kind of making jokes about it, but it is tough to get rid of that stuff that you've spent your whole life, you know, maybe 40 or 50 years telling yourself or being told, you know, and again, that distance between what your heart says and what your brain keeps repeating to you.
Right, absolutely.
Real different, real different. So it's all well good to say some of those things, but, you know, how do you, in practicality, and you're saying, Pinkley, practice, that practice is enough.
I think practice, but then you also have to believe. You have to believe in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's when you're in a crisis or you're thinking that, wow, the world is going to end because this happened or something happened, it's hard to go to that place. It really is. This isn't easy. I'm not saying it's easy, and I'm certainly not a perfectionist around it because I was curious, and I think that that's a key word also, is to leave your intuition, your heart, and your mind open to curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talk about intuition, it is a feeling. It is not something that you can just put on the table and go, this is tangible. I also had someone tell me one time that I was a head thinker, and I disagreed with that because I always thought my thoughts came from my heart.
Huh.
And my actions and my intentions or what I wanted in the world came from my heart rather than my head. But I guess unbeknownst to me, your heart has to go funnel through up your brain, and then it comes out and is an action.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
I was just going to say, I don't think you're right, in my opinion, Connie Sue, that it's not a concrete concept. And I don't think it's a final destination that we ever, like, finally learn. I think we are in the process of it our whole lives, right?
Right.
Of finding out who we are and where we are and what's important to us. And I do know that what's important to me now has certainly changed from what was important to me when I was 21.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
When I was 16. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, those kinds of things. So I think, what's that saying? It's about the journey.
Yep. Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Not the destination.
It's not the destination, it's the journey. I think that's what we're talking about, is how do we live through the journey.
Yeah. I remember being very young and newly married, and my husband and I were still in school, and I kept thinking, okay, I can't wait until we graduate so we can start life.
Yes.
And then he decided to go on to medical school, and so I kept saying, okay, I can't wait until he's done with medical school so we can start our lives. And somewhere along the line, it dawned on me that this is my life.
Right.
Right now, what I'm doing right now is my life. It's not something that's coming later. It's not something that I'm just preparing for here.
Mm-hmm.
This day-to-day is my life. And that was kind of a startling thing for me. maybe everybody else gets that. I didn't. It took a realization for me to really get that.
So I have another book on my shelf where she talks about intuition, and I know we've been talking about the inner critic, and I want to talk about the positive, the more the guiding part of the inner critic, which I would call intuition. But this is a book by Shakti Gawain, and it's called Living in the Light. So it's very woo-woo, Heather.
More woo-woo. Okay.
That's a special term that I learned at work, because we were, like, divided in two camps, people that believed it, people that didn't. And the ones that don't believe it are like, that's woo-woo. So that's why I keep saying that. So Shakti Gawain says, when we consistently suppress and distrust our intuitive knowingness, looking instead for authority, validation, and approval from others, we give our personal power away.
Mm.
Leads to feelings of helplessness, emptiness, a sense of being a victim, and eventually to anger and rage.
Ooh, rage, okay.
That's pretty deep, right?
Yeah. Don't you find, though, that as you're aging, some of that stuff is just kind of happening?
I
guess
feeling.
Not.
I am looking less for authority and validation from others.
Yeah, me too. Changed?
Yeah.
And I'm caring a lot less what they think.
Yes.
You know, I remember this happened to me a few years ago. I've lived my whole life in these little spurts of realizations, it seems. And it occurred to me that, you know, when I was young, I mean, you know, the bag boys at the grocery store used to fight over who would bag my groceries, you know. And then about 5 or 6 years ago, it started dawning on me that it was paper or plastic, you know.
Yeah.
I was no longer, you know, anything to fight over at the grocery store. And at first I was kind of sad about that, and I thought, you know, nobody's looking at me. Nobody's paying attention to me. And then all of a sudden I thought, yeah, nobody's looking at me and nobody's paying attention to me, and that gives me tremendous freedom.
Yeah. Shakti also says that most of us are in touch with our intuition, whether we know it or not, but we're actually in the habit of doubting or contradicting it so automatically we don't even know it has spoken.
Hmm.
And she says you have to practice a new way of living. You have to. Your intuition is always correct, but it takes time to learn how to hear it correctly. So,
and to trust it. Isn't the trust part of it too? Is to trust your intuition?
Yes. Well, because I think because we equate it to the inner critic, tuition and inner critic think they are the same thing, but they're
I think what also happens is they end up being in conflict with each other.
Yes.
And that's one of my biggest questions right now for myself, is there have been some decisions that I've made that have put me in conflict with myself, not anybody else, but with myself.
Mm-hmm.
And why do I do that?
Oh, that's what I keep saying. The lesson keeps coming back until you learn it.
But why do I not, but why don't we listen to, like Heather's asking the question, why do we have this critical voice? And I'm asking the question, why do we end up putting ourselves in conflict and not trusting that intuition? And I think a lot of it has to do with we listen to other people. They think they know better than we do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think there are different reasons for it, but is there a driving force that that I'm getting something out of being in conflict as opposed to just taking the time to listen and react in a way that those can come together in peace, not just my intuition, but my heart and my brain, that all of those things are interconnecting together in a harmonious way, that when I'm making a decision, I can move forward in peace rather than in turmoil. And you were mentioning, Deb, about not having some of these critical thoughts until you were married. And I look back and I think to myself, basically, I think that my external, environmental, and being in an extremely controlling and abusive marriage taught me to react that way, that was a survival mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
That this is how I'm going to be able, this is the only way I'm going to be able to survive is if I respond quickly, knowing that I'm in conflict, because there's not time or the energy or the foresight to react in a calm and nurturing way. Because abusers, as we know, are always mostly in that explosive or this really manipulating behavior that it's very confusing. So I think over time, my body, everything about me it's been a learned behavior to react in that way. And that's kind of why I was wanting to know about my intuition, you know, why I was really curious about this conversation that we're having today.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important. I think the fear of the unknown, if we don't talk about it, if we don't get some education or information about what's next, you know, then we can kind of live stuck in that unknowingness, that that fear.
Well, I want to touch just briefly on the last of the five pathways to listening to your inner voice. And this was a resource that I found that I really liked because it's simplistic in form. And it was by Claudette Rowley, who is a coach, consultant, and author who provides information and training to executive leaders, does career coaching, and is helping those resolve their inner and external conflicts. So the last piece is identifying your limiting beliefs. What does that mean?
I don't know. I guess you have to figure out if there's a something in that inner voice that is consistently saying, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, or this is where you need, you know, where you're bad, this is where you're bad, this is where you're bad. And if the theme keeps repeating, then maybe you need to look at that particular issue.
Yeah. I think that's where I think, too, for me, I always look at what do I have control over in this situation? And it always boils back down to me. I only have control of me, darn it. So that means what can I do and what can I change and what can I work on for myself to make this easier. So, yeah. And I find that if I listen to the inner critic or the inner judge or the negative voice, that and I do what that is suggesting I do, I get another opportunity later in life to make that decision again. Do you ever have that experience where it feels like I've done this before?
Sure.
Actually, yeah.
Learn the lesson.
Yeah. I've done this before, and this time I'm going to do it differently.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess that's how I kind of feel about this job situation. Is, yeah, you know what? I've been here before. I cowered in fear. I worried myself sick about how I was going to meet the mortgage payment, you know. And it's like part of me is saying, you know, maybe that's my inner voice saying, you should be worried. You should be scared, you know, spitless. You should just be really, really worried and in a panic about this, and yet for some reason I'm not.
Good.
It's kind of like been there. Somehow it'll work out.
And what's that like for you, Heather? I mean, I think that's awesome. I think that that's, you know, that's a place of peace.
I wouldn't call it peace.
Well, it's a place of calm. It's calm. You're centered.
Yeah. But it's definitely, I think, going to be more productive for me.
Yes.
Because instead of running around, you know, terrified and going this direction and that, like, you know, the proverbial chicken with its head cut off, I'm more focused. I found a job that I would really love to have. I don't think I'm going to get it. Again, because of I don't have the correct degree. But I'm going to try for it anyway.
Absolutely.
And so my brain is going, okay, do you know anybody at this place who could advocate for you? Do you know anybody who could give you advice on it? I mean, I'm tending to come across it more logically this time.
Also, look for the how can you make it a transferable skill? The degree you have, how can that transfer to this position? And what special insight it will give you to be productive in that position, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Very good way to look at it. But you guys are my peeps. You always come through and with help for me.
You know it. Well, I think we help each other. It helps me to talk about these things.
Yeah. So, okay, maybe I'll set aside my woo-woo thoughts, and maybe I will really, really concentrate on what that inner voice is telling me. Because I know that it's been telling me some pretty awful stuff, and it's been telling me that for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is the catalyst that will make me look at that differently and end up being more productive because of it.
Yeah, here's
a couple of little examples that I want to share with our listeners about your belief system. As an example, an old belief system might tell you that one thing is right and one thing is wrong,
mm-hmm.
or you tell yourself you only have two choices, or your inner critic expresses an opinion that's very limited. So instead of saying I only have this choice or this choice and either or, include in that I have many different options, maybe some I've not even thought about.
Yeah. Deborah, I see we have a caller. Would you like to tackle our caller here and see what contributions they have to make?
Absolutely. Hello, caller. Deborah, Heather, and Pinkley. How are you?
I'm okay. Hi, it's Ebony Empress from the UK.
Hi.
Just want to say hi to you ladies.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Hi, you too.
Hi. Just listening to your show, really interesting. I think it's interesting how as you get older, you know, all these things kind of, you know, in your life start to line up. You know, I was listening to some of the stuff you were talking about, kind of how things can change. Not wanting that validation is an important one, and I totally agree with that. As I get older, I find that I don't need the attention. I know women are always the ones that are seen by men as the ones who want attention. We always want to be seen. We want to be noticed for our looks or our beauty or our intelligence, whatever it may be. We're always attention seekers, according to men. And I think sometimes that's right. But I think as you get older, you do kind of manage that whole validation thing. And I think that is because your self-esteem has grown and you have more confidence in who you are and what you're about and what you want to achieve for yourself.
Well, I think that's very, very astute, and I would agree with that wholeheartedly. I know for myself, I have just noticed so many changes as I've gotten older that it's just almost miraculous. I was talking with a woman the other day, and I said, how come nobody ever talks about the good stuff about getting old? They talk about what bones hurt and what disease you're going to get and how you're going to be this, that, and the other thing and what you're going to look like, but they don't talk about all this good stuff. And I would say that's one of the good things that has happened to me as I've gotten older.
Yeah, I think, you know, the whole thing about being older and wiser is so true. You know, I would never, I might want to maybe get the body of a 21-year-old again. You know, I think the mind, you know, the mind, I don't want that mind. I don't want that ignorance that, you know.
That vulnerability.
The vulnerability, yeah. That whole not knowing what you're about, you know, being so green to the world. And what it holds, and I think that's the benefit of getting older. But I think one of the things that we have to do, apart from embracing, you know, that those changes in our lives, is also to pass it on to our young people, pass on our wisdom to our young people. Now, sometimes I think that there's a failing there in our society now that, you know, the wisdom of the old is not kind of relished. You know, people, younger people don't want to go to their elders and get more information about, you know, to save themselves from making the same mistakes that we did. You know, they're not thinking, well, you know, I need to invest in speaking to older people so that I learn more. I just learn more. Yeah. You know, you don't need to make, I think, you know, growing up, if I had listened more, and I know we always say this, if I listened more to my elders, I probably would have made half the mistakes that I made in my life because there is wisdom with age.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for calling in.
Please, join us again. Thank you so much.
It looks like we're about running out of time.
Yep. And we always like to quit our show each week with a sterling quote from Deborah. But first, I'd just like to pop up and say, you know, personally, I found this show very helpful to me. And I really liked your comments, caller, because I think that that's right on track. And I think that maybe one of the things that's going to be helpful for me is knowing that as I have aged, these worlds have opened up to me. These ways of thinking have opened up to me. And so maybe I'm actually ready for a little of the woo-woo in looking at that inner voice.
Yeah.
So thank you, ladies. David, do you have a quote for us?
I do. And I was trying to find some really pithy quote, but I came up with instead with one from Mother Teresa, and she says, loneliness and the feeling of being unwanted is the most terrible poverty.
Ooh.
And I thought that fits because our inner critic kind of makes us feel unwanted sometimes. And so we can work on that ourselves, on eliminating our own sense of poverty by, you know, listening to our intuition. So thank you for listening, and we are Three Women.
Three Ways.
Three Divas. Until next Saturday, 10 a.m.
Please join us.